desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good afternoon, good morning, whatever time of day it may be in your time zone, prolific as they are. Every single one of them covered by this program, Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell, my honor and privilege to be escorting you through yet another weekend. All right. First, I want to do a total free book promo for Michael Crichton. Oh, my God. You know, I'm an avid reader, really avid. I devour books. I read and I read, and I get off very late in the morning when I do work, and so I'm a night owl all the time. And then when I finally do settle into bed, I get involved in a book, and baby, that's it. If it's a good one, I can't stop. I'm sure many of the avid readers out there are familiar with that problem. Anyway, rarely, as many books as I read, rarely do I say, man, this is one you've got to read. But, man, this is one you got to read. It's Michael Crichton's Prey. Now, I don't know how I've read State of Fear, so I'm late on Prey, and I don't know how I missed Prey, but let me read you from the back of the book. In the Nevada desert, it's always the Nevada desert, in the Nevada desert, an experiment has gone horribly wrong. A cloud of nanoparticles, micro-robots, has escaped from the laboratory. This cloud is self-sustaining, self-reproducing, intelligent, and learns from experience. For all practical purposes, it is alive. It has been programmed as a predator. It is evolving swiftly, becoming more deadly with each passing hour. Every attempt to destroy it has failed. And now we are the prey. That should be enough to get you started. And it's one of those, I can't put it down, and I'm halfway through it, and I'm already angry because I'm halfway through it, which means I only have half to go. That happens to me with books. I wonder how many of you are that way. When you get one so good, that you're savoring every page, and it's getting shorter and shorter, and you're almost done, and you just know the next book you pick up is not got a chance of being that good. Well, that's Prey. So look for it, grab it, whatever. All right, let us quickly look at the usual depressing world news. No exception tonight, I might add. It's the second anniversary of the fall of Saddam's regime, the toppling of the statue and all of that symbolism and all the rest of it. And, of course, there were thousands, if not millions, of happy, thankful, screaming Iraqis saying, "Thank you, America," in the streets, right? Not. Tens of thousands of supporters of a militant Shiite cleric filled central Baghdad streets Saturday and demanded that American soldiers go home, marking the second anniversary of Baghdad's fall with shouts of no, no to Satan. That would be us, right? We're Satan. We saved them from a brutal dictator who tortures and kills, and we're Satan. Is there no end to the thanks you get? To the west of the capital, 5,000 protesters issue similar demands in the Sunni triangle city of Ramali. Make that Ramadi. Reflecting a growing impatience with the U.S.-led occupation and the slow pace of returning control to an infant Iraqi government. So there's no end to the punishment one gets for trying to do something good for people. Prince Charles and Camilla Parker Bowles got married, and that just led the news and everything, and I don't know, to me it's a big so what. The British royals are okay, but I don't know. I don't care what Prince Charles does, and I wonder how many Americans really do. Cardinals, this, of course, is going to be interesting. Cardinals began an intensive period of silence and prayer before their conclave to choose the next pope, saying Saturday they would now stop speaking publicly to protect the very strict secrecy surrounding the centuries-old tradition. This is going to be something for all of you to watch. It's really, really, really going to be interesting. In a moment, that was as much of interest as I could drag out of the normal world news. In a moment, the rest of the news, as Paul would say, and some of it is doggone interesting. Would you like... I am every bit as fascinated, maybe even more so, with holes in the ground as I am with space travel. We know less about what's beneath our feet than we do what's beyond our atmosphere. You know, that's fact. Well, I've got two stories to stand your hair right on end if you're one of those type people. Story number one, we'll just get it boiling up a little. Hole drilled to bottom of Earth's crust. Breakthrough to mantle looms. That is a headline. Scientists said this week that they had drilled into the lower section of Earth's crust for the first time and were poised to break through to the mantle in coming years. The Integrated Ocean Drilling Program, you see they're doing that out at ocean, seeks the elusive MOHO, a boundary formerly known as the Mokrocivic Discontinuity. It marks the division between the Earth's brittle outer crust and the hotter, softer mantle. The depths of the MOHO vary. This latest report, which drilled 4,644 feet below the ocean seafloor, appears to have been about 1,000 feet off to the side of where it should have been to pierce the MOHO. So in other words, they got down there quite a ways and they began going off to the side instead of drilling down to the soft, chewy center. The new hole, which took nearly 8 weeks to drill, is the third deepest ever made. The rock collection brought back to the surface, providing new info about the planet's composition. One of the scientists said it will provide important clues on how ocean crust forms. Already the types of rocks recovered show that conventional interpretation of the Earth's evolution are oversimplifying many of the features of the ocean's crust. So in other words, what they're finding does not exactly coincide with what they thought they would find way down there. The latest drilling was done at the Atlantis Massif, known at the intersection of Mid-Atlantic Ridge and the Atlantis Fracture Zone, two plates of the planet's broken crust. The seafloor of this region is therefore easier to reach, you see. It's not clear whether drilling should continue at the new hole or if they should begin another hole in yet another effort to reach the mantle. Such work is not likely to begin again in the next year, said Barbara John, a University of Wyoming geologist and one of the co-chief scientists on the expedition. We need to evaluate all the data we have from the cruise and reanalyze the seismic data to determine whether it's better to deepen the current hole or drill elsewhere, or maybe even collect additional seismic data to better constrain where to drill. Now, this next story, I love. I love it for its entertainment value, and I guess it's somewhat entertaining in a way to imagine this, but I'm not so sure it's a great idea. The headline is NASA Meets Hollywood, Real Mission Proposed to the Earth's Core. And this is the senior science writer, Robert Roy Britt. A Hollywood-like proposal to explore the center of the Earth, listen carefully now, folks, calls for exploding a crack in the planet's surface and then dropping a probe in behind tons of molten iron, which would sink and then forge a path all the way to the core of the Earth. The plan is not ready for prime time, its creator told Space.com, but neither is it pie in the sky. Exploring Earth's belly is ambitious in a scientific sense and could yield valuable data. The solid inner core, actually, rotates faster than the outer core, which is fluid and is responsible for our magnetic field. But scientists don't know exactly why all this is so, nor do they know the exact composition or temperature of the core. If further research showed the core mission could actually work, it would be comparable in dollar terms with many space projects, said David Stevenson, a Caltech planetary scientist who worked on several missions for NASA. Stevenson explains his idea in an article entitled A Modest Proposal for the May 15th issue of the journal Nature. So this is good stuff, folks. Let's continue. Stevenson figures, now, see if you're ready for this, that all you do is take a nuclear device, big one, would likely be the best way, he says, to blast the necessary gap as long and deep as several football fields and about a foot wide, 30 centimeters. The event would be commensurate with an earthquake measuring about 7 on the Richter scale. At least 100,000 tons of hot iron would be poured instantly into the crack, along with a well-protected probe about the size of a grapefruit. Now, once you set that condition up, the crack, he says, is self-perpetuating. Think of that, a self-perpetuating crack. He explains the weight of the iron, which is much denser than the Earth's outer regions, would open a gap all the way to the outer portion of the planet's core about 1,860 miles below. The probe would fall at about 10 miles per hour, 16 kilometers per hour, as the crack closes up behind it. The weeks-long mission would seek to measure the temperature, electrical conductivity, and chemical composition of the core. Stevenson said the amount of iron needed is equal to what's produced on Earth in about a week or less. We've spent more than $10 billion in unplanned missions to the planet, said Stevenson, but we've only been down about 10 kilometers, 6.2 miles, into our very own planet. Most of the universe is above us and empty. Stevenson notes, yet, quote, the part below is crammed with interesting stuff and is mostly unknown, end quote. A spacecraft sends its observations back, of course, as we know, by radio, but radio signals don't propagate through the planet. So, the Earth probe would relay data to the surface by deforming itself to create low-intensity waves akin to sending sound from a loudspeaker. Think of the probe like a throbbing heart, said Stevenson. It will set the neighboring material in motion, and that will cause a sound wave to travel away from the probe, in fact, all the way to the Earth's surface. The idea is a bit reminiscent of a recently released movie, The Core, in which Terranauts travel into the planet to jumpstart the core, which has stopped rotating and begun to cause all manner of peril at the surface. In an email interview, Stevenson said he first conceived a core mission many years ago, and that the scientific connection between the fiction and his fact-based proposal is negligible. But once again, ladies and gentlemen, we would create a crack in the Earth, and we would do this with a very large nuclear device, which would produce about a 7 on the Richter scale, kaboom. And then the idea is this crack would continue to open and close behind the probe that would be rocketing toward its center. Now, I'd like to see a show of hands on this one. How many of you would like to see a nuclear device exploded, causing a crack in the Earth, and then a probe sent to its very heart? Is this a good or bad idea? Anyway, NASA involved, they've had some pretty strange ideas over the years. One of my favorites was that in order to combat global warming, it was suggested that an object, perhaps a large, you know, rock, space rock, perhaps 2-3 miles in diameter, would be reoriented so it made a very close pass to Earth, knocking Earth from its present orbit and moving it a little further away from the sun, producing cooling, definite cooling. And then, say the scientists, when we get global warming under control, we simply arrange the passage of yet another close rock, returning us to our original orbit. At the time, I didn't think that was too good of a great idea exactly, and I still am not necessarily in favor of it. But I would say this is right along those lines. Put a nuke down a crack, make a giant crevice, and then have this thing that virtually falls right to the very center of the Earth. But God, I would follow it, wouldn't you? Wouldn't it be interesting? Aren't you dying to know what's really down in the middle of the earth? I know I am. I don't think they know. I think the middle of the earth is every bit as mysterious as what is beyond our atmosphere. I got a very, very interesting, I don't know why this touched me the way it did, but it did. It says, howdy, Art. You might not know this, but ferrets are very smart animals with very distinct personalities. I've never known two ferrets whose personalities were alike. They make great pets, but they are hard and expensive to take care of. Not exactly a pet for everyone. They are not at all like hamsters or gerbils. They love to interact with people to the extent of almost requiring it. My wife and I have 9 of them, and they keep us busy. Anyway, I posted in the ferret mailing list, one of the biggest ferret forums, about my experience with a ferret of mine named Mocha. Mocha was a small, dark, sable female ferret. She was one of my favorites. Well, 2 Christmases ago, she got caught. She actually caught the flu from me. Now, I didn't know that was possible. I did not know that humans could pass flu to their animals, but he says Mocha caught flu from him. As a result, she caught a secondary bacterial infection and went into her nervous system. We lost her shortly afterward. It was horrible, as you can imagine. Yes, I can. Losing a pet is like losing a child. When Mocha was alive, she had the habit of crawling up my leg to say hi and see what was going on with my computer. About a week or so after she died, I was sitting at my computer, and I felt Mocha nudging my ankle, just as she's always done, as she had always done before she died, just before she climbed up my leg. Well, I looked down. Of course, nothing was there. At first, I was startled. That's how real it seemed to me. My emotions went rampant. I closed my eyes just so I could absorb it. Tears came. Over the course of the next 2 weeks or so, I'd feel her nudging my feet every once in a while, almost always when I wouldn't have expected it. Every time I'd close my eyes and try to absorb the feeling of her. I always talked to her. I told her how much I missed her. I was sorry I gave her the flu. Eventually, when I felt the nudge, it was like an old friend visiting. I would manage to sneak in and smile. I'd sneak in a smile with my tears. After a couple of weeks, it did stop. I had always thought that she had come back to say goodbye. Since I was working when she actually died, my wife was the one to have taken her to the vets, and we lost her shortly thereafter. My wife never experienced any of the visits I received, maybe because she was there to say goodbye. Now, this is what I hadn't expected. Shortly after I posted this story, I got a couple of responses from ferret owners who'd had the same kind of thing going on with them, one of them with a cat. At any rate, thank you very, very much for the email. And, you know, I had a cat once named Yesu. And Yesu got shot. Somebody shot Yesu. And Yesu, anyway, there are many times, I wasn't there, I also was not there when Yesu died, but many times I have felt the presence of this cat that was so, so very close to me. And I, too, talked to Yesu. So I don't know. I don't know. Are these real manifestations, whether it's a human or an animal, sort of visiting after physical death, or, more likely, are they manifestations of our own brain? Well, of course, things like we do on the show, like the voices that are picked up on electronic equipment that we play here on the air, those kinds of things certainly have got to make you go, hmm. I will continue to explain. In fact, tomorrow night, Dr. Raymond Moody is going to be on this program, and it'll be dead down that alley once again. No pun intended. I've got another very interesting story for you about a man who was driving his car and died. At least he believes that's what occurred. In fact, he sent me a picture of the accident, and clearly nobody could have come out of this alive. And he did. And in a way, he didn't, depending on whether you believe what he has to say. But we'll get to that story when we come back. Bottom of the hour, we're going to be doing open line, so listen very carefully. The phone numbers are a bit different on the weekend. We'll have them for you in a moment, along with the story of the man who died, but didn't, exactly, from the high desert in the middle of the night on the weekend. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell.
On the east side of Chicago, back in the USA, back in the bad old days. In the heat of a summer night, in the land of the dollar bill, when the town of Chicago died, and they talk about it still. When a man named Al Capone tried to make that town his own, and he called his gang to war with the forces of the law. I heard my mom cry. I heard her pray the night Chicago
like to meet the idiot who canceled Dead Like Me. That's all I've got to say. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? I want you to listen very closely because the numbers are a bit different on the weekend, and here they are.
To talk with Art Bell, call the wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is, and Dead Like Me was on Showtime with Ellen Roth. I interviewed her. I was so impressed with that program, remember? Well, anyway, some idiot canceled it. I must admit, the second season drifted away from the original concept. All they would have had to have done is to resurrect it properly, is to return what they had done in the first season, which was absolutely brilliant. Brilliant. If you ever get a chance to see the first season of Dead Like Me, you don't want to miss it. And they should return to that and bring it out somewhere else, because it just was brilliant stuff. In a moment, the story of the man who died, but, well, didn't. I don't know, I just liked this story. It's just an email, and here it is. I had an experience in June of 2003 that changed the way I viewed death. You know, I used to believe when it was over, you know, worms crawl in, worms crawl out. Then, I had a tragic wreck in our Explorer. I flipped it, and I've got a picture of it here, and, you know, you wouldn't make it out of that. Anyway, he goes on, here's where my beliefs changed. I think in the universe that I was in when this happened, I actually did die. But when I opened my eyes, I was looking at a lit dashboard. I crawled out of the truck, talked to the police, was taken to a nearby hospital for observations, released, no ticket, no injuries. Something seemed very odd about all of this. Then I realized I did die in that accident. But for me, I continued in another universe, just as if time continued. I apologize if this seems confusing, but what I mean is that I absolutely left behind a family in mourning. But from my perspective, nothing changed. When I switched universes, I just picked up where I left off. And now I believe that this is what happens to everyone when they die. It is only from our perspective. From theirs, something else happens and they have no idea, but they continue on as if nothing happened. This would also explain ghosts. We're simply catching a glimpse of that alternate universe where our dead loved ones and others have moved and are living normal, everyday lives. Would this mean we live forever? I don't know. But who says that when we jump from one universe to another that we must continue from the point of origin? You may jump back to your infinite self and start from there with no memory beyond that age. At any rate, I have a very disturbing feeling that in another universe, my children, my wife, are still mourning my death. I wish I could console them. I thought that was pretty doggone interesting. Oh, there is one more thing I've got to get in, and it concerns, and what idiot? You know, in my state, Nevada, is a very, very popular destination for RVs. RVs bring lots and lots of money into the, you know, our state. Now we've got Senate Bill 412, which has been introduced into the Nevada legislature, Senate actually, to get this. Stop overnight RV parking on any public lot in the state. And it gives a place where you can view the bill. The bill was introduced in the Committee on Government Affairs and, if passed, would prohibit RV parking on any kind of public parking lot anywhere in the state. Here's a little bit of the text of the bill. Quote, each board of county commissioners shall, by ordinance, prohibit an attended vehicle, recreational vehicle, motorhome, or travel trailer from parking overnight in a parking facility which is dedicated or intended for commercial use or for use by patrons of a shop, store, or any other business. Parking facility means a parking deck, parking garage, parking structure, paved or unpaved parking lot that members of the public regularly enter, are reasonably likely to enter, or are invited or permitted to enter as invitees or licensees. The term does not include a recreational vehicle, a park, rather, as defined in NRS so-and-so. Anyway, due to the way this is worded, it is likely these restrictions will apply to any publicly accessible parking lot. That would include, for example, casinos, truck stops, dirt or gravel, boondock parking areas throughout the state. What idiot thought this up? Do you have any idea how much money it would cost the state of Nevada? Now, look, let's not, here in Nevada, begin to emulate California's idiocy, huh? You can pass laws until the cows come home, I guess is the motto in Sacramento. But here in Nevada, I would not have thought such an idiotic, stupid idea would even be proposed, and I can't imagine it would be passed. Certainly would cost a lot of dollars, and frankly, I doubt it would be particularly well enforced, because most towns, cities, counties realize that an awful lot of tourist revenue comes from people who park their RVs, so I think it's a dumb idea. East of the Rockies, you are on the air. Hello? Hello?
Hello, Art.
Yes, hello.
This is Steve from Cleveland, listening to you on the big one, WTAM.
Hey, Steve.
I just wanted to thank you for, especially because I'm a Gulf War vet, all your programs with Joyce Riley. I've been wrestling with the VA about Gulf War syndrome. The cause that I got from them was cigarette smoke.
Cigarette smoke?
Cigarette smoke.
Well, that's as dangerous here as it is in Iraq.
Yeah, I guess it is. But, again, just wanted to thank you for all your years. I'm a night worker, and a lot of us vets really appreciate your programs.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much, Art.
You're very welcome. That's it, huh? Well, you're very welcome. Cigarette smoke. I've depleted uranium, I thought, perhaps, or something of that nature, but cigarette smoke. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
This is Daniel calling from the socialist idiocy state formerly known as California.
Well, I meant no real insult.
That's true.
Simply, you guys, you know, pass an awful lot of laws. I mean, laws about this, laws about that, and here we're doing something stupid on our own over here, so.
Okay, scientifically burrowing into the Earth's core,
yes,
is undoubtedly a cover story for a doomsday device similar to a cobalt missile pointed at the ionosphere, but in the opposite direction. Mm. Because according to published reports, insiders like former President George Herbert Walker Bush and others are aware that the Earth's core is inhabited by intraterrestrial beings who are regularly visited by extraterrestrial spacecraft through two portals of entry, a volcanic island on the North Pole, and first discovered by Admiral Byrd, and an underground cooperative base in Antarctica built by the Nazis. Therefore, burrowing into the territory also known as hell would mean war on hell and hell for us.
Mm. Could be bad. I don't know about all you just said, but, well, of course, nor can I deny it, because we know so very little about what's really in the Earth, right? I heard all the stories about the Nazis and, you know, the whole the North Pole and all the rest of it, and I have no idea whether that's myth or reality, but truth is, we certainly don't know very much about what we walk on, what's inside, what really is way down there. Is it what they think? Is it what they imagine? Or could there be a world, could there literally be a world beneath our feet? First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, can I hear that?
I'm afraid we've got a bad connection, sir.
We're fighting in the middle of the earth.
Oh, man, that's a really bad connection. Try redialing us, please. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, I'm Pat calling from Minneapolis, 1500 AM KSTP.
Yes, sir.
How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Excellent. I don't know. This is the first time I've ever tried calling, really, and I got through. I'm kind of amazed. It's cool. It's cool to talk to you, Mr. Bell.
Thank you.
I've listened to you for quite a while. So, I don't know. I guess I got a strong view against drilling into the earth like that, because it, I mean, I don't know. Just thinking about like the plates and.
You think something could conceivably go wrong?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, yeah. It could. There was a movie where, no, of course, you know, Hollywood. But there was a movie, you know, where they set a bomb off on one of the coastlines, and it sent the one of the plates moving at a rapid speed, and they had to detonate another bomb. And that's what I was thinking of. And one other thing I had was about. Going to Mars to look for microscopic life, and I don't know, it's just, I personally think that's just a bad idea.
Another bad idea. Well, there are many who believe that bringing microscopic life back from Mars could conceivably be a poor idea. That there could be some microorganism, and a microorganism, to be fair, is quite likely to exist on Mars, that we would not be prepared for, that our immune systems, for example, might never have seen, well, would never have seen, therefore would be unprepared to combat, and, well, away you go. Away we go. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi. Hello?
Hey, what's up?
You are up. Turn your radio off, please.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's quite all right. I'll wait.
All right, I got a story for you.
All right.
My friend, he said he was in his backyard, and he was, the motion light kept going on and off, and, he saw something out in the back, and he didn't know what it was. He said it looked kind of like a deer, but kind of like an alien. And all of a sudden, like, I thought he was crazy. I didn't know what he was talking about. And then a year later, we were out on his back porch with a bunch of buddies, and the guy that was with us, his grandmother lived across the street. And turn that down. And the guy lived across, his grandmother lived across the street. And I'm choking here. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, you're choking because someone turned the radio on. I try to warn people.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to make you sound like an idiot because you're going to hear your own voice.
Yeah, that's what they're doing, basically.
Well, all right.
Keep that down. All right,
turn it off all the way. Tell them turn it off.
Okay, it's all the way off.
All right.
All right. And he said that his grandmother used to tell stories before this kid's house was there that people used to see centaurs in the woods.
I see that, and I hear the radio, and they're not going to cooperate with you. I'm sorry. Let that sort of serve as a lesson to all. I know that your buddies or your friends would like to hear you on the radio, and that's a big deal. Well, if they want to do that, they need to go to a completely different part of the house and listen. It's got to be out of your earshot, because for obvious reasons, for broadcast, we delay everything by about 6 or 7 seconds. The time during which you have an opportunity to make a career decision if something is said. And so everything you say comes out of the radio actually 6 or 7 seconds later. And if you have the radio turned up, you're going to hear that, and it is going to confuse you to the point that you're going to lose your train of thought completely, and you're not going to sound coherent. And certainly you don't want that. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. Turn your radio off, please.
Yeah, oh, yes, sir. You betcha. I'm sorry. I wasn't prepared for you to jump on so quick.
Well, I don't screen call. So anyway, what's up?
Well, you know, I think that digging in the middle of the core is a bad idea.
Another vote no, huh?
Yeah, well, you know, what if it is all molten lava, and because of the way the air and the atmosphere hits it, it starts squirting out like a squirt gun, you know, and all of a sudden the earth starts flying all over the place.
Well, you're both...
You know, or the crack gets bigger and they can't stop it, it just starts cracking, you know what I mean?
Worse yet, sir, how about this? What if it's pressurized in there, and, you know, we've all blown up a balloon and then gone, see the blue balloon fly? See, that could be bad.
Let's say goodbye to mankind then, huh? Yeah, I think that's a bad idea, to be honest. Curiosity once killed a cat, you know?
Yes, and who knows what it might do to 6 billion humans.
Oh, man, buddy. I mean, or cover the earth with lava?
Nevertheless, I'm fascinated by what might be down there.
Well, it could be some great things we find down there. Maybe certain elements or minerals and things that are cures for things. You never know.
You but never know. Maybe even, well, hell. What if drilling down that deep actually opened a portal to hell? What if all those voices recorded in Siberia suddenly were freed, had an escape route? First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Art.
Yes.
Hi, this is calling from St. Louis.
Yes, sir.
First time caller. I was introduced to your enlightening program by... actually, a television program, I'm sure you're aware of, Peter Jennings.
Oh, yes.
On the UFO study. And just wanted to let you know how grateful I am for your broadcast. I wanted to ask you, have you ever touched upon the subject of bovine spongiform encephalitis?
Yes.
Or commonly known as mad cow disease?
I certainly have. And as a matter of fact, they've got a show, my friend Whitley Strieber, I think coming up this next weekend, has a show which actually asks the question, is Alzheimer's actually mad cow disease?
Mm-hmm.
There's very little difference, you know,
right,
in the two, and I wonder if that could be true. Colm Kelleher, I think, is going to be the guest, and he would seem to suggest that it could be, that Alzheimer's is the same thing as mad cow. Mad cow is Alzheimer's.
Right. That it could be a variant, and if I could share with you my concern. From what I understand, mad cow disease is caused by a brand new infectious agent called a prion.
Right.
Up until now, prions were never known to exist. Consequently, there is no therapy for infection by prions. And furthermore, the incubation period from the time of infection till the onset of disease, which is known to be 100% fatal, can be anywhere from 20 to 30 years.
That's right.
And what bothers me is that the federal government has not mandated to the producers of cattle that they stop feeding animal byproducts
Well, I think we have in this country, or at least certain animal byproducts. It kind of makes you wonder about the burger joint you were at 30 years ago, though, huh?
Well, I mean, you know, the simple solution would be to put a ban on feeding animal byproducts. Right now, it's only on a voluntary basis, and it just, you know, we have no idea how many potential people are currently infected until years from now. So maybe we can start a little fire and get something done.
Well, the whole thing is kind of scary.
Right.
And it could be, and it could be that all of us, or virtually all of us, to some degree or another, if that would be true, could be infected. And as I said, it sure does make you wonder about, I mean, I have loved hamburgers. I have always been a hamburger guy. Since I was a little kid, I have loved hamburgers and ate scads of them. So I hate reading about this stuff, but you never know. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, I was just listening to this gentleman that was talking about the mad cow disease.
That's right, yes.
And there is stuff called doxycycline. That's the only thing that will pull this stuff out of your system.
Huh.
It was made specifically for this, and they've known it all along and never told anybody. And I know because we had it, we got checked, and we got rid of it.
You had it. Wait a minute. Let me reset this. You know you had it. How do you know you had it?
We got tested for it. There's a test, what you call a PCR test. And you go to your health department or your doctor, you get the PCR test done, they check it. If you've got it, you take doxycycline for 2 weeks, and it pulls it out of your system. It's the only antibiotic that's made like this.
I didn't think it was even responsive to antibiotics.
Yes, it is. This is the only one that will do it.
Huh.
It was made specifically to pull stuff out of your system.
Well, that's certainly news to me.
No, honey, it's been out for quite a while in Newswatch magazine. The church got the information out about this, and there's other. I've got all the information on it. My dad was with the VA at the time they did this.
Do you think that mad cow and Alzheimer's are one and the same?
I'll tell you what it makes. HIV, mad cow disease, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, MS, fibromyalgia, Kwoptik syndrome, Crohn's disease, leukemia, and cancer. It does all of this.
Well, I'd be the last to deny the possibility. Thank you very much. There are many who believe that cancer may be virus-based. Actually may turn out to, you know, we don't know what causes cancer. We don't know what causes cells to suddenly become dividing, start dividing in a very accelerated, unnatural way. We have no idea what does that. We'd have it cured. There are some who think it is virus-based, and it may turn out to be. Who knows? Anyway, that's what they're going to talk about on Dreamland. I thought it was timely, and in view of that mention, Alzheimer's, could it actually be mad cow disease? All right, coming up in a few moments, the most loved, and hated guest that ever appears on Coast to Coast AM, Major Ed Dames. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Riders on the storm. Riders on the storm.